Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to today's In Conversation With podcast. I'm Georgie Courage-Cole, the founder and editor of Sherlux, and today I'm joined by the very, very brilliant Lorraine Candy and Trish Halpin. They are two highly esteemed names, best known for their careers in the magazine world. Between them, they have edited Elle, Sunday Times Style, Red, InStyle, Marie Claire. I mean, you name it, they have been at the helms of the names we all know and love. Today, they are hosts of the immensely popular Postcards from Midlife podcast, an intimate look at what it means to be a peri and postmenopausal woman in 2021. They talk about parenting, mental health, you name it, they are covering it along with some incredible guests. I'm so delighted to have you both here. Welcome, ladies.
Oh, thank you for having us in your gorgeous Sherlux palace, I'm going to call it. So glamorous.
Well, a slightly messy one, but anyway, don't look too closely. Look, you are total legends, both of you. Trish, I've interviewed you before. We did a Success Stories podcast a while ago, and it was a real highlight, and I followed your careers really closely. We're here to talk about being 50-something-year-old women, being parents of teenagers, et cetera, et cetera. But for people who don't know you and aren't sort of as keyed into the magazine world, can you just give us a bit of an elevator pitch as to your careers and all the brilliant things you've done?
So I am a journalist, started as a journalist. I worked in newspapers. I worked on The Times as features editor. I was women's editor at The Sun. Then I moved into magazines. I used to edit Cosmopolitan, Elle. I edited for a large chunk of my career. And then most recently, I was at the Sunday Times Style. I've also had a parenting column in two big national newspapers for the last 10 years. I think that's it, really.
Well, you've written a book.
That's it.
Oh, Christ, I've written a book. Yes, shit, I forgot about that.
I've written a book as well, which became a Sunday Times bestseller. So, yes.
And we launched a very successful podcast.
And we've launched a podcast, which is almost in the millions at the moment.
It's very much in the millions. Yeah, exactly.
Over a million. So it's, we're quite proud.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Trish?
Yeah, so quick snapshot. So began my career in magazines on a magazine called More, which you're probably all too young to remember, but it was a very sexy fortnightly magazine back in the kind of 90s. And from there, I went to Red magazine just after the launch and became editor-in-chief there for 7 years, moved across to InStyle, which was purely based around fashion and celebrity and beauty, and then got my dream job, which was Marie Claire, which I edited for 10 years. I left that 2 years ago, and I was kind of ready for something new. And with this one here, we'd already dreamed up a bit of a side hustle.
We had.
With this podcast, because we realized that we were at a point in our lives that we were feeling really confused. We didn't know what was happening. We were feeling really strange. We were having all these weird conversations about not feeling right. And we're journalists. We didn't know we were going through perimenopause. So that's why we launched the podcast. But it's so much broader than that. It's about lots and lots of different things.
It's about midlife, isn't it? I mean, for the record, you are 53 and 54. You are parents of 6 children between you. You have 4, Lorraine, Trish, you have 2. Can we start talking about the fact that you are 53 and 54? You are very stylish. You look amazing today. I mean, you're clearly enjoying life.
We have got 30 years of fashion and beauty advice behind us, so we're in a really privileged position of being able to, you know, it's a weapon in our armor, so we know how to look good. And, you know, that's something that we wanted to share on the podcast as well, because we've had all these stylists and all these experts around us for all these years, so we really embrace fashion and beauty as well. It's a really joyous thing to find in midlife as well, and a lot of women don't embrace it until they get a lot older, and it actually is just so lovely to be part of that world.
It's not superficial, is it? It's so powerful. Getting dressed, washing your hair, putting makeup on, you know, it's so powerful. You do both look great. Is that something you'd really encourage other women to make a difference. And it's never too late, right?
Yeah, I think, definitely it does make you feel better for sure. And I think in midlife, you can go through, the midlife years, you've probably got teenage children, you might have aging parents, you're probably at a point in your career where you're reaching the heights and you're under so much pressure. And it's trying to keep all of that together is quite stressful, along with the kind of hormonal shifts that are going to be happening. And you can lose your identity a bit, you can lose your sense of self. And I think your fashion, your beauty, that can be really anchoring for you. And kind of when you look in the mirror and think, oh my God, I don't know who I am anymore. When you put on your amazing leopard print dress that Lorraine is wearing, she's painted her nails beautifully red, that makes you feel like you again. You kind of start to recognise yourself.
I think you get very overwhelmed at this stage of life, and there's a lot to deal with. And sometimes just taking control of very small things makes you feel very confident. You know, being able to choose what you wear, and it makes you feel better for 10 minutes in the morning. You know, being able to feel that your hair is nice. And I think those things are really powerful. I don't think they are specific to women either. I mean, we always talk about it in that context, but I think men might find other things, small things like that, in their daily basis. But it's specific to everybody, really.
Yes, absolutely.
I think you get dressed, it's the first thing you do at the beginning of the day, and it tilts your head. It's an intention, and it tilts your head in the direction of something good or something bad or what you've got to deal with. And I think when women, and we've seen this certainly on our Facebook group that goes with the podcast, is that the moment you start losing that, the moment that you haven't got that, is the time you're going to be thinking, I've lost who I am. So I do think it's important. But we're not saying you've got to spend a lot of money.
No,
we're not saying,
we're
not judging women who don't find it important, who find their value and their happiness in other things. And that's really important that we don't, as women, judge other women. But it isn't shallow. In fact, I replied to a post the other day on the Facebook group where a woman said, I'm so shallow, I'm thinking of having this done. And I said, but you're not. This is about your intrinsic personality and identity, and I don't judge you for that.
What other things do you think are important factors in being happy as women? I mean, I'm 40. I've read a lot and interviewed a few people, and I'm interviewing more and more, I think, as the Sheer Luxe audience kind of grows up with me, interviewing more people about perimenopause, menopause, getting older. You hear a lot about anxiety and confidence. And are there other steps you've taken or changes you've made or things that you do in your life that help you feel fulfilled, feel happy? Is it about your career?
I think it's got to start with looking after yourself. I mean, this is knowledge that everybody has, but sometimes you find it hard to put into practice. But, when you are running around everywhere, looking after everybody else, kids, family, whatever, career, etc., if you aren't feeling good about yourself. So I think exercise in your 20s, 30s, you should be laying a groundwork, a foundation of exercise that works for you, that just becomes a kind of natural part of your weekly routine, because that will pay dividends as you get older, not just in terms of your health, but in terms of your ability to cope with everything that can be thrown at you in midlife. So finding an exercise wellness routine, your eating, your nutrition, it's about self-awareness, I think. And that is physical self-awareness about what works for you physically, but also your mental awareness. And, we all know about mindfulness and meditation, but being able to kind of check in with your emotions and understand, if you're feeling anger, that's fine. You're feeling angry, you're feeling sad, whatever. You've got to kind of acknowledge your emotions, sit with them. They might be uncomfortable, but you've got to kind of understand why. And then you can maybe try and reframe it and saying, right, this is making me angry because, but if I look at it in this way, actually, this thing that's really driving me mad because it's really hard work is actually a really exciting opportunity that I've been given. I think when you get to midlife, you start really knowing yourself and understanding yourself.
Yes.
It's a journey.
Well, you said a good thing, didn't you, Trisha? Your son called you the MVP. If you have the most valuable pair, the one that, you could sell for millions, that is best on the pitch, et cetera, et cetera, then why would you not absolutely expect that MVP to take care of themselves?
Yes.
And it's also very brilliant role modelling for your teenage girls and boys. I take care of myself. They learn to take care of themselves. But I think the thing, particularly for you're 40, at this stage of life, you're losing hormones. So from now on till about 65, you will be hormone deficient.
Lovely. Hit me.
But there's no way of avoiding that.
We wish somebody had told us.
Of the population,
I'm listening,
will
ladies.
Go through that. So your hormones will fluctuate, then they will decrease. That's simply what happens in life to women as they grow older. if you want to replace those hormones, you're going to need hormone replacement therapy. So this is something that we talk about a lot on the podcast. That is a very, very viable. It's a preventative medicine. It stops osteoporosis. It stops heart disease. So you need to start thinking about that and all the other things that you may need from your GP in advance. We've had some brilliant NHS GPs and experts on the show, and they will say when you walk into a surgery, there are two really, really big experts in the room. You on your body and the GP. So know about your body. Start to know about it. Yeah. Start. Look back on your pregnancies. Look back on your teenage years. What happened to you then with your hormones? All of that knowledge is relevant to what will happen to you after the age of 40. Mm. I think we've had our head in the sands a bit because we keep thinking, because society has told us that as we get older, we are not so valuable. We don't need to really think about ourselves and our bodies in the same way. I had to speak to so many young women say it's too early for me to think about it. It's never, ever too early to think about it.
Are there practical things? I mean, you touched on meditation, you touched on exercise. Like, personally, what do you do? You look great.
I'm an open water swimmer, so I do a lot of cold water swimming.
Do you? You're one.
When I say that,
I think you're mad.
I say that, and people think, "Well, she must be Olympic standard. How amazing!" Honestly, I'm the slowest person in any lake or any sea or in any pod of swimmers. But I love to be in very cold water, and it's something I found when I thought I was losing my mind in my mid-40s. I was editing Elle, won loads of awards. We were doing phenomenal things. I took on the digital side of the business. I had a three-year-old, and I was at breaking point, really. I was completely overwhelmed. My hormones were off a cliff, and I needed something to reset my mind. And I started swimming. I started swimming in without a wetsuit, in cold lake. It had a really incredible physiological effect on me. I just felt amazing for 3 or 4 days afterwards. And then I found a ton of women beside lakes and on beaches who were all doing the same thing. And now I have this amazing network of friends who don't come from my industry or from somewhere else completely, going through all their journeys, who are incredibly uplifting. And these women are uplifting out of the water to me as well. So that, I think, was probably a huge game changer. And it made me, sometimes when I had a massive thing to do at work, and I'll have gone swimming in the cold in the Lido in the morning with a group of friends who had nothing to do in my industry, I'd have gone into a meeting and thought, I just did a really brave thing this morning. So this is, you know, easy in comparison to what I had to do this morning.
Did you do it this morning?
No, not today, I'm going to say, but that's what I would be thinking as I was going into this. I think it's that kind of thing, finding something like that that's purely yours, takes you slightly away from everything, makes you feel a bit brave. And then, as Trish says, letting those feelings go past all the time and just observing them rather than engaging with them and getting into a kind of mental stress about them.
Yeah. Can I just ask, where do you swim? You swim in a Lido?
I swim in Parliament Hill Lido in North London. And then I swim at Shepperton Lake at the weekends.
And how long are you in there for?
Well, it depends on the temperature. Anything under 10 and you're only in there for a matter of minutes. But through the summer, we're in there for an hour, hour and a half. But the Lido at the moment has dropped considerably. I think it's down to 12. So I'd probably only do about 15 minutes in there now.
I mean, that's not a 30-second cold shower, is it? That is like...
I do 3 or 4 cold showers a week as well.
How long are you in there?
Well, anything between 1 and 3 minutes is good.
And do you just feel alive when you get out?
Yeah, I mean, it obviously has a very physiological effect on my metabolism. It might be different for other... I mean, some people, I've got Australian friends particularly, who will not go in cold water at all under any circumstances. And there's a lot of science on it, and Southampton University is doing a big project on it at the moment. There's a lot of science around how it affects the way you are physically and mentally.
Are you really chilly for the rest of the day? Do you then have a really hot shower afterwards?
No, you have to gradually warm up. You have a hot drink, you layer yourself up.
Trish, right, well, you did your sailing.
Well,
I remember seeing pictures of you sailing, but you've gone out and show my husband that he's dying for me to get more sailing.
Yeah, no, that's kind of like a holiday hobby thing, because we started doing these, like, because you get to a point where your teenagers, they're just quite annoying on a day. So we decided to go sailing with some friends, and my husband can sail. And then I thought, well, you know, I'm going to get my qualification. There's no, I would never have thought that I would do that, but why the hell not? But but that's kind of fair weather, you know,
right?
Greek islands, that kind thing.
But your training wasn't the Greek islands, it was quite cold.
I had to do that. Let's do the North Sea.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was in
saving lives at sea.
It was October or something. Yeah. It was a bit cold. Yeah, definitely a bit nippy. But you know, I know, because we've obviously got probably younger listeners than us on this, this, but I think with exercise, I've talked about it earlier, about trying to have it as part of your, you know, your weekly routine. Also think about adapting it as you get older, because I was always in the gym, you know, as kind of gym bunny person, doing the routine.
All that HIIT.
All of that. Spin classes. I do one at lunchtime when I was at Marie Claire, and I could only do it on a day when I knew I didn't have any meetings in the afternoon, because I would be beetroot red. But I was like, after that, bars and that. Ah. And then when I started getting, you know, into my 50s, I was like, my body, I can't do this anymore. You know, you get to the point where you think, I can't keep up in the spin class. I'm not enjoying it. And I thought, right, well, that's fine. I've got to start doing something else. And I've started doing, sounds a bit old ladyish, but it really isn't, sort of power walking. I swim as well. I think about it very much in terms of, what does my whole body need? So I know I need some cardio for bones. I need strength classes. So I do, you know, grid. You need to keep yourself strong and supple. So that's Pilates and yoga. You need to do something for your mind. So I swim as well. You need to do that. You know, so you think, try and think about it in a not just a, I want to be thin kind of way, or slim kind of way. It is about, what does my body need, and listening to your body.
You know, you can do brilliant online yoga for 15 minutes every morning. You can, Instagram gives you 20 minutes strength classes. It's wherever you are. You don't need to throw a ton of money at this, and you don't need to be overwhelmed by the choice of it. You know, we always say, add it into, don't take stuff away and be a martyr about changing your routine. Add something into your day. Add 10 minutes of yoga in, add 10 minutes of weights or body.
And it's never been easier, has it? It kind of, you can't make excuses now, really.
Or do, you know, do 20 squats while you're waiting for the kettle to boil. You know,
I'm squatting while I brush my teeth.
Exactly. Well, the other thing is, you know, learn to balance. That's the biggest thing that we've been told. We've been told by many, many experts. One of the things that causes the problems as you get older is it's falling over in your 60s and 70s. So if your body is strong and you've learnt to balance up until then you are preventing quite a big potential health disaster.
I know it sounds so simple. I fall now, though.
Stand on your leg while you're brushing your teeth. Yeah, if you can stand on your leg with your eyes closed for 30 seconds, then that's the way forward.
I dropped a wooden door on my toe the other day. My friend was like, I mean, when you are older, I'm gonna be like, oh, she's had another fall. I mean, hopes, I need to start doing that. Can we talk a bit about diet? Mm-hmm. Not from a weight loss perspective. Do you feel like you've had to adapt your diet?
Yeah.
Having been through, are you through the menopause? Where are you?
Should we just talk about that for a minute? So basically, menopause is a year from the last day of your last period, and quite often you don't know you're going to have that, and that can be, the average age in the UK is 51. So I had my last period at 51, but I was only technically in menopause a year after that. However, in the 10 or so years leading up to that menopause date, you're in what's called perimenopause.
Yes, I think there's so much misunderstanding. Yes. I've only learned this recently. Yes. So yes, do
and
reiterate.
That's, as Lorraine was saying, that's when your hormones start to fluctuate, your estrogen and your progesterone, your female hormones, they start to fluctuate. Your estrogen crashes, it's all over the place. And as women, we have estrogen receptors all over our bodies. They are everywhere. They're in our brains, they're in our bones, they're
every
in
organ.
Our literally every organ everywhere. So if you can imagine, if your estrogen has plummeted and when it rises back up, it doesn't come back to where it was before, it's going to have a lot of effects. And that's why there are nearly 40 symptoms of perimenopause. So you have to be aware in that year from 40, really, up to 51, that these things can start, you know, this is
and
what's going to happen to you.
It affect your mental health, because you have, the estrogen is the petrol of your brain, basically, and testosterone and progesterone. So once that all starts to disappear or fluctuate, then you will get brain fog. Then you can't remember things. It came to a head with me when I got in the car and I couldn't remember which side of the road to drive on. And I really properly couldn't remember. And I thought, this is it. I've got early onset Alzheimer's. This is must be what the problem is. But it's not. It's because I was deficient in a hormone that was powering my neurology. And so I went on HRT. It worked for me. So it's, you have to be aware that perimenopause.
Are you still on it?
Yes, you can be on it for the rest of your life. And one of the main reasons I went on it is because I don't want to get osteoporosis, and I don't want to have heart disease. There was a very misleading survey 20 years ago on a form of HRT that is no longer prescribed on women over 65. And the medical profession have followed this terrible mythology for quite a long time because women's health is not as important as men's health. Well, I think so. But, you know, that aside, that survey caused enormous problems. There is no more risk being on HRT than there is if you drink a glass of wine a night. So that's the risk. So we know that because we had the world's leading breast cancer surgeon.
I mean, there needs to be you know, an international campaign always, doesn't it? Because it's a bit like eggs and salmonella. We're over this now.
I think the Channel 4 documentary, if anyone hasn't watched that, that Davina, Sex, Myths and the Menopause, Davina McCall presented, that has all the facts
on it.
It's
really good.
So you go through perimenopause, and it affects everyone in really, really different ways. And there is no one test. So you can't go to your doctor and say, test my hormone levels, because you would have had to have tested them when you were 20 to know what your base level was. So there is no
test.
So
they fluctuate every day. Yeah, so they can be up one day and down tomorrow.
Exactly. So you just need to look at the symptoms.
Is it like a balancing act? So they give you a level.
Yeah.
And then you tweak it. Are you sort of tweaking the dose until you start to
feel better? And you should be getting body identical hormone replacement therapy, not bio-identical. So there is a big industry in private healthcare where women are given lozenges. They're taken orally rather than rubbed on transdermally. And those are unregulated. But a lot of women get to their GP and are offered antidepressants. So women will say, I don't know what to do. So we go to the private doctors, many of whom are offering bio-identical HRT, which is more expensive and it's not regulated. So we don't really know whether it's working or not in the way that body-identical does, which is what the NHS would give.
So you are saying that having interviewed all the amazing people you have, when it comes to HRT, you want body identical.
You need to go to your NHS doctor and ask for body identical HRT. And if a private doctor says, I'm going to test you to see if you're in perimenopause or menopause, that is not possible.
I think the problem is, women are anxious about it. They're worried about it because that's, your hormones are fluctuating and you can get terrible anxiety. And so you can get very worried about it. But there are so many brilliant websites. Dr. Louise Newson, and her website is full of the most amazing, helpful, useful, understandable information. Honestly, it's really not rocket science. Mm-hmm. You know, most GPs, they have something like 3 hours training in menopause in their whole training. And if you think that 50% of the population are going to get menopause and they've had three hours training.
Trish, you said a year since your last period.
Yes.
So you've had the menopause, which is that year date.
Yes.
Can I ask?
Well, I've been on HRT since I was 49, so I don't know when my last period was. You don't have periods if you take the progesterone pill every day.
I see.
So, which I'm quite happy about because I have no attachment to having periods, Well, a lot of people get terrible periods in their,
You can come back stronger, can't
you? I could probably, I could absolutely tick the day and it would all be over. And I used to think, why are women making such a fuss about having periods? And then obviously when I hit 45, it was Armageddon. It was horrific. I was having to take days off. I was having to take painkillers every 20 minutes. It was just the worst of times. So I was quite happy to go on eutrogestrone, it's called, and you take it every day and you don't get periods. So I'm who knows when my last one was.
But we are getting quite technical here. We're giving you an outline, and also please go and look at Dr. Louise Newson's website or Dr. Shazadi Harper's website.
They've both written books about it as
There's loads of books.
Shazadi's brilliant.
So do please follow up on this. Don't take our word for it. Follow up on it in terms of getting some expert help.
She's brilliant as well.
Yes.
She's written her perimenopause book. She's a nutritionist. Yes. Sitting there, I'm going to take that.
Yeah. Yes. Well, that's got it all in.
Hearing just normal people speak about their experiences teaches you more than any expert, I think. I don't know. I just think women who are sharing their experiences is the best advice. We were going to talk about diet. And not necessarily for weight loss, although I know people say that, can't get it away from my middle when I hit this age. And I knew that might be cutting out food groups because it does X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
How have you had to adapt your diet and nutrition as you've got older? And if so,
I've been quite lucky because I've always been vegetarian and quite healthy in what I ate. I've also been lucky in that I didn't really put anywhere. A lot of women do put weight on around their middle, the sort of muffin top, and it becomes really, really hard to shift. And fundamentally, it is because you burn less calories as you get older. As well, when we've spoken to expert nutritionists like Emma Bardwell, it's the hidden sugars in things that we're probably not thinking about. You might think, well, I only ate this today. Yeah, but did you have a smoothie? Pure sugar. Did you have two glasses of wine? Pure sugar. It's the kind of buildup of the kind of hidden sugars that you might not be thinking about. So if you are concerned about that, that midlife muffin top, then you are going to have to think a little bit about your calories in and out.
I think your body changes shape as well, which
have
is...
Have you found that?
I've found that, yeah. I mean, I, you know, I'm a very short woman, so...
Oh, are you?
I'm 5'2", yes.
You're sitting well. I'll work that out.
I carry myself taller, yes. No, I think your body changes shape, and... But also your likes and dislikes change shape, and the way you live is different. When you've got a house full of teenagers and a full-time job, and it's quite hard to be healthy all the time. You just don't have time to go. And I don't like cooking. I find it boring and rubbish at it. So it's hard for me to kind of get as healthy as I've wanted to be. But you do... We had Jane Clark on the show, and she made a really good point. She's the kind of legendary nutritionist who we'd use in all the magazines we've edited. And what she said is just add one healthy thing in every day. Maybe drink a pint of water at the beginning of your day, because that might make you less hungry, less picking at sugary snacks, and add one healthy snack in instead of thinking I'm gonna take out the biscuits. Just add in something, and it gradually you start to feel better. And when you feel better,
you want to do it more. Like getting ready and putting makeup on adding a little
just the tiny things, the steps. Don't add extra stress and pressure on yourself, because so much is going on to then think, and I've got to lose weight, or I've got to change shape. If you want to get fit, that's to keep your bones strong and healthy. That's the reason. I did a lot of exercise. I used to run marathons. I was kind of, very fit for my middle 40s. But actually, that was, again, just like extra pressure on my body that I probably didn't need to add in.
Your mind and your time.
Yeah, my time getting up at 5 a.m. Yeah.
I know. Go, go, go.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
We're going to come on to children, but can we talk first a bit about careers, how you feel about your career? I mean, in the media, there are definitely a lot of women who feel their days are numbered, who aren't perhaps valued as men would be at that age. How do you feel as two women who've had amazingly successful careers, who are now onto something with, all this advice that you're giving, and you're writing books and speaking, etc. Do you feel really confident to go? And how do you feel about being 50-something-year-old women, your careers, where you are, what the future looks like?
I think we were both editors in the absolute heyday of magazines, and it was fantastic and we enjoyed it immensely. But that whole world had changed, and we realised we needed to change and adapt and go where our audiences are, which is part of the reason why we stepped away from magazines, because women have come with us, they've followed us through our careers. And, women are listening to more podcasts now. And we felt that that was a better place for us to be talking to them and creating content. And it's been super fun. Yes, it's scary not being employed. This is the first time I've not been employed officially. I've always worked for a company. And with that, you get your salary, your sick pay, your pension. But this was a risk. This was, taking a gamble. I would just be working for myself. We would be doing this together. We would be creating our own kind of income. And it's been fantastic. It's been really, really exciting and liberating. And what it's made me do is realize that I don't know what's going to be happening in 6 months, but I'll probably be okay, because I always have been, and I've always been okay in terms of work and career. And this has evolved, hasn't it, Lorraine, into places that we never expected it to.
I think our skills as editors worked brilliantly for the print products we were working on. And then, we did quite a bit of digital content as well. But I think the thing that Trish and I spotted, and I think we have to claim this and be proud of it, was we knew women were moving into a slightly different area. We knew people were listening to things. And when we pitched the podcast idea to, I was at the Sunday Times at the time, and they had an agreement with Wireless. So we went to Wireless and said, we have this phenomenal idea. And it was the first big podcast that News UK had done. And then as we were working together, you know, I was trying to edit weekly, write a book, have four children and do a podcast. And I think we realized the future was probably audio or video. That was where we were going to go. So yeah, to be modern, which is what we've always tried to do in our careers on magazines, this was the modern thing to do. So we stepped out with it. And actually, it's grown phenomenally fast. You know, we were a long way ahead of, you know, we regularly at number one in the kids and family chart on iTunes. And we were quite a long way ahead of other people who talk about this kind of content. But our drive was to tell women in an easy to digest way what was going to happen at this stage of life, our audience that had come with us. We know everybody. I mean, I know that sounds very arrogant. We know everybody. We have had Elizabeth Hurley, Davina McCall, Mary McCartney. We just picked up the phone and said, would you like to come on our podcast? These are women that have come through our career with us. And they just said yes. So yeah, it's been quite a journey. And then the experts have been the most fascinating people to have.
But I think the combination of the two is and you too. I want some more of you two just chatting sometimes. I mean, I love the experts, but I love you two chatting. Do you see the world still as your oyster in that?
Well, it's a bit stressful, but
I mean, you see, like a career that spans another, you know, and we've had focus groups here with our gold readers, which is our sort of grown up product we talk about. And we've had focus groups, and they're like, we are in our prime and we want to achieve, and we've got the time and still loads of energy and all these years ahead of us. And do you look at it that way?
Well, I certainly don't want to not be working. I want to carry on working well into my, you know, 60s and beyond. And I think, you know, the thing for women in their careers at this stage, so many women drop out or don't take promotions or whatever because they're having issues. Sorry to keep bringing everything back to perimenopause, but it is so defining, you know, it can be in your life at this time. And there's a lot of companies trying to introduce menopause policies to try and keep women in and support them in and get them through so that all these amazing senior women aren't lost from those companies. But I think for me,
and they're needed at board level, aren't they? That's kind of when you make it sometimes, and that's when it's so unrepresented
You know, this is riding high. We're going to see where this goes. I don't know. I'm feeling really excited about, well, I don't know what's around the corner, and that's okay. Yeah. That's great.
And I guess your children are growing up, aren't they? And maybe you're thinking, well, I'm going to have a bit more time actually to focus on me and what I want to do.
Well, it's more than a podcast really, isn't it? Because we do a lot of work with beauty brands and fashion brands outside, you know, with women at this stage of life, because we meet so many of them, and we, you know, we're kind of a walking focus group.
And there's such a gap. Good fashion and beauty content, isn't it?
There is. It's a thing we get asked about a lot. You know, if you want to buy a pair of jeans after the age of about 45, it's quite confusing where you choose. And we like to make sustainable choices. We've got all that information. It's just, you know, our job is editing all that information, which is what we've done all our careers. So we've got other things. We've been working with big corporations on their menopause policies, so how to talk to women, the language to use. We've been working on product launches. So it's kind of become a bit bigger than it was. So I think we're going to keep doing that. I'm going to write another book.
Our children
are going to university, which is our...
God,
you're like dreaming.
I do. I'm like in big schools, and oh my God, my head is spinning. I mean, it's just, I mean, we're sort of 3 years from it, and suddenly you have to think about these things. It's terrifying how time goes so quickly.
It does,
Your twins are 17. I was going to say they must be about 17. Yeah.
Well, mine are 19, 17, 14, nearly 15, and 10. So I have a 10-year-old as well.
So you had a baby at
43.
You see, there's still time if my husband's listening. This is time like a stat record. I found someone on holiday who was 44 and had a baby. It's like, you see.
It's quite tiring, is all I'll say.
Yeah, I know. I don't remember that much, sadly. But, yeah, I remember worrying when they were little. And someone saying to me, just don't worry, because really it's not now that they need you. It's as they get older. And I remember thinking, I mean, my God, were they... Right. I mean, mine are 4, 9, and 10. And I'm feeling, that the 9 and 10-year-old are the ones that need me more than ever. How is it? Does it all work out in the end? Tell me it does. And give me some advice, please, and our listeners.
I think you just have to know what's coming at you. So I wrote a book called Mum, What's Wrong With You? Yes. 101 Things Only the Mothers of Teenage Girls Know. But it applies to boys as well.
Which is a massive success, isn't it, your book?
Yeah, I was quite pleased. But do you know what that means? It's just for ordinary mums who are quite shocked and stunned by the absolute time commitment to teenagers and just what they're going through. And they're basically, their brains are rebuilt between the age of 12 and about 25. So that it's taken apart the brain, put back together again. And we are expecting them to become adults and be logical and not lose things and not be chaotic and not have emotions all over the place. They're flooded with hormones. So if you can just step back from that and just allow that to happen and watch it happen and not take it personally and not spend your whole time saying, you need to respect me, and you need, they just can't. They physically, you know, it's like we talk about the room. They physically cannot see the mess in the room. You can, but they can't. So don't get cross with them about that. That's the least of your worries. Yeah. So I think also we had made the point in the podcast that as they're going through this really chaotic, quite demanding time, and they need you quite late at night most of the time, you are going through your hormone. Yeah, you lose your evenings. You won't be able to, you know, you're not putting anyone to bed at 8 o'clock anymore. They're there all the time. And then... But they're not there at the times you miss. They're not there for Sunday lunch anymore. They're not there Friday nights. They don't want to watch telly with you anymore. They don't want to come on holiday with you anymore. That's all normal, but it's quite a lot to take on. But they are almost constantly needing you. I think younger kids need to be loved, and lots of people can do that for them. After about 13, they most often need mum. Mm.
And how do you deal with the... knowing they need you, but the also the kind of lack of appreciation, because I imagine that's hard, and you know they need
brutal.
You. Almost like when you have a baby and you do all, you know, all those, it's a bit thankless, isn't it? You just change nappy after nappy after nappy. And then it gets really lovely, like my four-year-old. I mean, if I could bottle her. And,
yeah. Or, you know, that's why I say to young
girls, so that she can just be sweet
stage.
In heaven.
Yeah.
And I feel, I'm very aware that we are heading into this territory where it's quite thankless. Mm. How do you deal with that?
I think the first thing for me was when they go to secondary school, sort of around 11, because with the twins, obviously, I've had everything in parallel, so I've never had younger or older.
And so you've got one of each, just people listening out.
Yeah, exactly. And they went to separate day schools. And I found when they start to separate from you, incredibly difficult, because you do everything for them, right? You're sitting there, you're helping with the homework, you're buying their clothes, you're taking them to every party, you're doing, you know, taking them to sports. Like, everything is around them. And then suddenly they start going, oh, I'm going to get the bus, mum, to school. I'm not, you know, terrible. I don't want you to take me. I don't. And it's really hard, because you've got to start letting go. Mm. And you've got to start letting them become who they are, because I love, in teenage years, I love seeing how their personalities come out and these people that they're going to be. And, you know, that can be quite difficult, because my daughter is the complete opposite to me. So anything I suggest to her, I'm like, what about, why don't you, you know, we'll do the complete opposite. Yeah. And I really struggle with that.
Yes, I've got a real pessimist and I'm a real optimist. Yeah. And she's last minute and lazy, and I was super conscious. She's like my husband. I'm like, how are you mine?
Yeah, but you're not going to change. It's taken me a long time to realize, but if you realize, I'm not going to change that. You can't change it. Just try and make the most of it. I remember my sister is brilliant, because she always says, and my daughter's actually quite like her, and she said, well, look, she's not you. She's totally different to you. So of course she's going to respond to things and react to things and do things in a very different way. And just because it's not your way doesn't mean it's the right way. You know, just because it's her way and not your way, that's okay. You know, it doesn't have to be your way. So that letting go of doing things your way and letting them do things their way, I think was one of the hardest things for me.
But they're different every day. Mm. I mean, you know, if you look at a 12-year-old and a 17-year-old, those are two incredibly different. If you look at yourself 5 years ago, you're not that different. But a 12-year-old and a 17-year-old could not be more different. So if you imagine that change is sort of happening seamlessly in front of you, but it's not really what the, you know, how they are in November is complete. They could be a completely different person by January. So to get set in, you know, to label them and look at them in one way, you just have to fluidly go with that. You just have to swim along with it and let it happen in front of you, I think, as long as they're not harming themselves, putting themselves at risk, which they do sometimes, or being harmful or cruel to other people. You've really got to step back. And that's the hardest thing, because you've had what psychologists call this period of latency, where they've adored you and you've been the center of their world. And then You know, they aren't. Psychologists said to me when I was writing the book, the worst phrase they hear, particularly with mums of girls, is she's my best friend or we're very close. That's a terrible thing to be in the teenage years with your daughter, because they have to reject all the bits of you they don't like, accept all the bits of you they do like, test this personality, test that personality, give you all those terrible feelings they can't deal with that are really, really hard and awful. And so who can deal with it? She can, because she looks like the most responsible adult. She's the nearest female to me. So all of this is going on, and you just have to kind of knuckle down and
patiently deal with it. Just suck it up.
Well, you find something else to do, and you suck it up, and you just find something else to do. And you say, I mean, I put it in the book, but it was the alternative title to the book was What's the Point of You? Which is what one of my daughters would frequently say to me. What's the point of you? You know, and it makes you feel terrible. Because you'd think, what, to step in front of a car to stop it running you over? That's the point of me.
Yeah.
Because that's what I would do, because I love you that much. And then you're not getting that love. You are, because just being there is giving them the love, and them staying around you and testing all this out on you. If they're going away and you're not seeing them, or they're coming back and saying they love you very much and they're your best friend, there's something very wrong with that dynamic.
I agree, actually. I always found that my mother's my best friend a bit odd. How are you preparing, protecting their mental health? You know, I mean, I've got a child with learning difficulties, so I feel huge pressure to protect his mental health. If I can get my children to 21 with their mental health intact and happy and to know they're loved and to have a good work ethic, that it will all be okay. I mean, it's only a few like major things I've got to achieve. But how have you protected their mental health? Is it just giving them your time and being there? Have you done anything more sort of proactive in terms of experts?
You have to, first of all, not expect them to be happy all the time.
Yeah, that's
I think
main.
We are driven to think, oh, kids have to be happy, they have to be happy, they're not happy, they're not happy. Of course they're not happy. Happy is just one of many, many, many emotions that they will feel. And they have to experience sadness, anger, rage, embarrassment, fear, failure. They have to, you know, of course they have to experience all of that, because that's what life brings you and throws at you, and you have to be able to deal with it. So you cannot jump in and try and fix it for them. You have to kind of, you know, Philippa Perry, this psychotherapist who came on the podcast, said you just have to, you know, if they're down in a well and they can't get out, you have to get down there and sit with them. You're not going to rescue them and take them out, but just be with them.
Well, I'm here for you.
I'm here for you. You're not going to like sort out the bitchy girls at school. You're not going to do this. You're not going to constantly be trying to make your child happy. What you need to do is just let them experience their emotions, understand their emotions, and understand that, you know, it's a roller coaster, isn't it?
Acknowledge how they're feeling.
But communication, but being there for them is the communication. And they often just go off to their bedroom and slam the door, and everything's your fault, even though all you've done is say, how was your day? You know, and you just have to say, look, how are you doing? I'm here for you. If you want to chat, I'm making a cup of tea. And that's it. But you don't want to be in there getting the nitty gritty of who said what and this,
and
that,
when
and
they say they don't want to chat.
Yeah.
And you know they need to. Wait, what do you...
Well, I'm intrigued by you saying you know they need to. That's the kind of thing.
Because I've got a daughter who's a very closed book. Mm-hmm. And it's literally like pulling teeth. Mm-hmm. And I can tell when there's something, and I know she's... And I'll get it out of her. I mean, it's excruciating. And I'm like, I'm not having this. Don't tell me that it's not okay, and then not tell me why it's not okay. You need to tell me. And I'm like, is that the right thing? But I feel like the problem aired is the problem shared, and like, even though I don't have the solution.
I think you start very early with this. So when you ask about how do you make them get through to, you know, your goal is to get them through to 21, but and as Tricia's feeling all the feelings, but they need to get themselves through. So they need to build their own mental resilience. That's not your job. That's their job. If you feel that your responsibility, they will feel they have to please you. And that's another pressure to put into there. If she feels she has to tell you these things, that's another pressure to put into her armor. It's often that the psychologists say to me that the stepping in with it, what you're showing is empathy, not sympathy. Then you start that at four. So when your four-year-old is having a giant meltdown about the wrong sock being the wrong shape, or you making broccoli and you know they hate broccoli, then you just say, that must feel very terrible for you. end of. Mm. That's it. So they, and then how are those feelings for you? And then they'll talk about how awful. And then they're, what they're doing is venting. And that's a good thing, just to let them vent. Sometimes they won't want to tell you why. The biggest thing that I learned from the therapist that I talked to for the book, and I did some volunteering on a crisis text line for adolescents as well, and I trained for that, so I learnt around it, was to listen to them. And not just listen, it's what they call active listen in therapy terms. So you ask them exactly what they're feeling, how they're feeling it, how it makes them feel, what they want to do about it. But if they say they don't want to talk about it, then in that moment, they probably don't want to talk about it. So talk about something else. Mm. But saying things like, can we talk about it? Tell me about it. That kind of, it's taking the power away. It's quite hard.
No, I mean, it's got to be a gentle thing, hasn't it?
Just, the piece of advice, actually, that I thought was really good from Alicia Drummond at Teen Tips.
Teen Tips is very good.
You know, if they come in like they don't want to talk to you, you just say, look, can we just have, just want to have a 2-minute chat?
2 minutes.
How are you? Can you just give me 2 words to describe how you're feeling?
Yes. I do out of 10. Give me an out of 10.
Yeah, I'll give you an out of 10.
Yeah, that's great.
Do you want to talk about it? No. Okay, but I'm here for you when you do want to talk about it. Is there anybody else that you'd like to talk to that might be helpful?
Yes.
Daddy or whoever? No. And that's fine. And then off they go. But they know that you're there for them. And that when they're ready to talk, they will talk.
Yeah, that's
they'll come back to you later with it. Sometimes a terrible scene will occur in the kitchen that will be awful and everyone will be shouting. Because we all get it wrong all the time. And then I will say, should we talk about it tomorrow? And then everyone will disappear.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I'm giving them 24 hours to process it. Me, 24 hours to process it.
Everyone's in a better
place. And then how you deal with the aftermath is almost more important than what you do in the moment. Kind of, you can say, if parents can say, I was wrong to say that, I should have listened to you, I shouldn't have said those words, I feel bad about it, and then they are showing that you are acknowledging you got it wrong and you've made a mistake, and they feel more comfortable doing that as well.
Before we finish, I mean, you've had so many guests, we touched on some of the names, Elizabeth Herney, Davina McCall, I mean, on and on and on. I'm going to put you on the spot. Are there a couple of things you've gone, okay, I'll never forget, and I have that with people, I'll never forget that that person said this to me, I'm always going to remember that.
One of the most brilliant conversations we had actually was with Dr. Pragya Agarwal, who wrote the book How to Talk to Your Children About Race, and also Motherhood, her most recent book. And I had completely taken it for granted that my experience of motherhood and mothering and my career and everything was from a very white point of view. So I loved the guests that have come on and brought us a completely different way of thinking and made us go away and reframe how we thought things, how we might deal with things in future, how we might talk to our children about things. Those guests have been really phenomenal because we wouldn't have met them in the print world. We wouldn't, you know, we wouldn't have had that if face-to-face engagement. And I think those really spirited, brave women who come from really diverse, different backgrounds from ours extended the conversation for us, brought something new for us.
Mm. I feel proudest of what we've done is that women really open up and are really honest. And Davina McCall crying on our podcast. We didn't make her cry,
listen to that, people.
Talking.
It was such a great
But also podcast. Somebody like, and this is reflecting what is going on out there in our Facebook group as well. When we interviewed Kate Thornton, actually, and the TV presenter, and she was, it was in lockdown. I think her son had just been sent home from school with COVID. We were just going back. And she was really struggling with her menopause or symptoms and her brain fog, her anxiety, everything. And her willingness to be vulnerable, to be open and to share and to talk about it, I thought that was incredibly brave and really,
well, so
really powerful.
So many women were going through the same thing, weren't they? Yeah. She was literally forgetting sentences, so she was having to write things on post-its and stick them all around the house because she felt so vulnerable that she would go out and she wouldn't be able to remember what she was doing, where she was supposed to be, how she was supposed to look after her son. She was a single mum. So it was, it's that vulnerability, because we know from the Facebook group, from our Instagram, that there's hundreds of other women going through that as well. Uh-huh. So, you know, and that there is help and there is advice and that we are delivering that from the experts.
There's
well.
A lot of fun and laughs too.
Oh, yes.
There are. Liz Hurley Spaniel. Elizabeth Hurley Spaniel.
Elizabeth Hurley.
Definite entertainment as well. But, you know, I hope that, like, we have these conversations, you're having these conversations that also, you know, women are feeling more and more competent just to talk amongst each other as well.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you're amazing role models at that.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Postcards from Midlife is just a total must listen, it is entertaining, inspiring, educational, and all the things we try and be. And, you know, I'm a 40-year-old woman and I listen to it and love it. And I can't Brilliant. Encourage Thank people listening you. To subscribe and get it in your life too. Ladies, thank you so much. It's been such a joy to chat to you.
Thank you, Georgie. Thank you for the brilliant questions.
That's it for today. If you enjoyed that, then do please rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends to listen to, and we will be back soon. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.